And welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Each year they gather to remember and keep the memories alive of those aboard Southern Airways Flight 242. On April 4th, 1977, that flight from Huntsville, Alabama, was en route to Georgia. But as heavy storms began, Flight 242 started to experience some trouble.
Now, the plane's pilot, Captain William McKenzie, tried an emergency landing on Highway 92 in New Hope, Georgia. Later, it would be discovered excessive amounts of rain and hail caused the engines to shut down. Now, in all, 72 people were killed. That included 9 people on the ground. And one of the passengers was Annetta Snell, an aspiring R&B singer.
Dennis, earlier that day, Snell had just finished a recording session and was heading back to New York. Snell had some recordings, but not a full album. And here she is singing You Oughta Be, You Oughta Be Here. This is in 1973, and it placed on the Billboard's R&B charts.
If she treats me, if she walks on your dream, you ought to be, oh baby, you ought to be.
And like many, the road to stardom had to be traveled through the backup singing route. Well, Snell never had a chance to finish that album. Joining A Closer Look to talk about Annetta Snell is her brother James Snell and journalist and author Cliff David. And we're hoped to be joined by Annetta Snell's music producer and friend Jimmy Johnson a little later. But for now, gentlemen, thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
James, I'd like to start with you. Tell me about your big sis, Annetta. What was she like?
Well, your typical big sister. You know, I'm there, a protector, if you want to use that term. But just a regular brother sister relationship.
When you hear her singing, what comes to mind?
Oh, well, memory of flashbacks and basically how I was when we were growing up, memories of what it is and how it used to be. But pretty much your typical brotherly sister relationship.
Where'd you all grow up? Where'd you all grow up? Because she was born in Florida.
Right. Well, Tennell, Georgia is where she actually grew up, was Tennell, Georgia.
Now, she was singing, I take it, came at an early age for her?
Yes. And I'd say she started probably say 16, 17 when she really started to kind of get involved with it.
What were your parents very supportive of her singing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Always. Always. I think that's really what she started out playing with a couple of things, trying to be something else that she probably thought she wanted to be. But then I think she just took hold. She just let things, singing just happened to be her thing.
Did she sing around the house?
Yes. We used to actually gather together, my brother and sister sometimes sit around and just talk about, you know how good we were. Ringers of singers could be or possibly be. But other than that, you know, just your typical brother sister things that you did when you were growing up.
Cliffs, I want to get your opinion on this because you've written about the crash. And, you know, at that time, and James, you may want to chime in on this too, when she was really, you know, making inroads into her career, there were a lot of powerful singers around. I mean, Aretha Franklin owned the charts. You had Gladys Knight, you had Patti LaBelle, I mean, Tina Turner, it goes on and on. At that time, James, was she wasn't deterred at all because there was so many other great singers out there. Was she actually just motivated by it because there were so many out there?
I think pretty much that's what it was, that, you know, those names that you call Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight, those were some people that actually would encourage and inspire. That's where it came from.
Yeah, and when I listened to her, there was that power, but there was something a little different, you know, listening to that song. James, I'll start with you. What was it, do you think, it was that made her different from all of those powerful singers that Rose talked about?
I can't really put any point, pin, thing, or thing on it. Actually, where it came from, I can't say. I just something that just, I guess as time went on, you get something you're interested in and you go from there, and it just took hold.
Yeah.
I think Annette tapped into something very powerful, and when she met with Jimmy Johnson in April of 1977, recorded with him, he recognized that because he had also recorded Aretha.
And the Muscle Shoals sound was different, though, wasn't it? I mean, it had a... So what was important about her in being in Muscle Shoals, do you think?
Annette spent the first 15 years of her career working toward the session she had with Jimmy Johnson. She paid her dues down in Miami. She paid it in Nashville, in New York. She traveled all over the country recording, and this was her chance to really show the rest of the world what she had learned during that time.
So it was a combination of opportunity and the sound they were getting at Muscle Shoals. It had a real Southern feel to it, no matter who was recording there, whether it was a white country singer or whether it was an African-American R&B singer. It just had a sound.
When I asked Jimmy Johnson about where that sound came from, he always jokingly says it's from the river. It's from the Singing River. And I think that's as close as he's ever gotten to putting his finger on it, other than the fact that these were a bunch of talented guys that were recording a bunch of talented singers.
James, can you recall how excited she was to be finally working on her first, you know, full album?
Pretty much, I can't put my finger on it, but actually when they, you know, like I said, we used to sit around a lot of time and talk about singing and whatever it is, and I thought I would be an aspiring singer, but it wasn't to be. But no, I would think that's basically what she did on a daily basis, something that she just enjoyed doing, and pretty much.
On April 4th, 1977, can you recall the last conversation you had with her?
Yes, I did. I got a phone call. It was probably early that morning, and that's when the recording session was done, and I received a phone call. And she referred to me as, you know, as a sis, and big sis. And she was telling me exactly, saying, we just completed that recording. And she was saying, I think this is going to be a hit. And we just had a regular conversation from that point. But pretty much that's where it started from.
Cliff's in that recording session on that date, was Tonight I Feel Like Dancing one of those songs? Or was this something another? Because that was a song we learned that had never been released. Was that part of the recording session that day?
That was one of the four songs that were recorded over the week recording session, and the one that Jimmy Johnson felt had the most commercial possibilities.
Well, we're going to actually play a little bit of Tonight I Feel Like Dancing. This is Annette Snell. It has a little disco feeling to it, and which I like.
Rose, keep your seat.
Now, this is 1977. Disco ruled. So this was, when you hear this, this was this is what we were hearing.
I'm embarrassed to say I was just transported back to 1977.
James, when you hear that, the disco era, I mean, come on, were out there.
It was a fun time. It was a jumping time. I must say, I enjoyed that. By the way, that was one of my favorites.
Really?
Yes, one of my favorites.
How did she feel doing disco? Because a lot of artists who came up in other traditions thought, oh, okay, we have to ride this wave, but can we ride it and be genuine? How did she feel about, you know, a song like that, which had a real disco feel to it? Did she feel she could get into that and it would work for her?
Honestly, I couldn't say. You know, like I said, I only knew what I experienced and what I heard and what she actually enjoy doing, but I know I can't really put any pinpoint thing on it.
She was really excited about this one.
Very excited.
Cliff, when you talked to Jimmy Johnson about that day, about the recordings, how excited was he that this was going to finally be the record that might really launch her career?
Well, Jimmy had a lot of experience launching a lot of special careers. Aretha Franklin, of course, is the first one that comes to mind. And he had always told me that he felt that Annette had a chance to have that kind of career. She was that powerful of a singer.
James, when your family received the news of the plane crash, how did they receive the news of the plane crash in 1977?
Actually, I can't recall it as pinpoint, but it was like late evening. And pretty much, you know, I received the phone call, and it was that, you know, something time when you have a phone call, it's like that ring to it that something's not quite right. And that's when I received the news about the plane crash. And from that point on, it was like everything was so fast after that point. You know, things were happening so fast. So, you know, it was, I can only imagine what was going through my mind during that particular time.
And your entire family.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Emotionally, my sister and like I said, my family members. It was a very, very emotional time for me. It really was.
Looking back on it, and Cliffs, I'll start with you, but James, certainly you can answer this if you like. We look at what happened then, and the rain and the hail were factors in the crash. If that plane were flying now, is it possible this might not have happened, that we've learned more about safety and what kinds of weather conditions to fly into? Have you ever had that thought that, wow, if a different time, different place, same conditions, they might have figured a way around it?
You know, I was talking with James and the rest of his family about that on the way over here, and you certainly can't know what was going through the pilots' minds at the time, but I think today they would have simply flown around the storm and not tried to go through it.
James, do you have that thought too? And what do you think about that?
It's hindsight is something that you just can't pinpoint. But yes, you know, so many things. I said, well, we could have done this, maybe we could have done that. But like you say, some things were not in our control, so it happened, you know, and that's just the way it turned out.
Gentlemen, each year as folks come back on this date here, but there's going to be something different this time. And Cliffs, there's actually going to be there's a plaque, but there's also something else special that's going to happen.
At the Saturday at the New Hope First Baptist Church in New Hope, they're going to be celebrating is not the right word. They'll be observing the 38th Memorial Service. And at that service, they're going to be unveiling the plan for the memorial, which I believe they hope to have up by the 40th anniversary, which would be in 2017.
James, how often does your family talk about Annetta to the younger Snail members, and how often do you play her songs and, you know, bring out the old photos and let them know that there was a very special member of your family?
You know, I don't really put a lot of time on that. You know, it happened, the situation, every now and then we speak about it, you know, every now and then, but that's nothing that I really just linger on. You know, it's a day by day thing. It's a day by day thing. And, family-wise, you know, I have my moments, mm-hmm. you know, it's to be expected. But other than that, you know, it's your typical thing that you're grieving, and that's what it comes down to.
Sure.
Yeah. And she was completing an album. Can you see, you know, a day when maybe we'd have a chance to hear all of it, you know, to be out there and have that out there where everybody could hear some of this music that's of a particular time, but that's a voice that speaks to you today.
Well, I can't speak for the rest of the crew here, but I'd like to hear a little bit more of Tonight I Feel Like Dancing.
Is that your cue to our engineer, Elizabeth? Now, let me ask you this. And I know we see, you know, movies, but this sounds like this is just my opinion. It sounds like an incredible story. You ever, Cliffs or James, anyone ever approach you about telling her story in film or a documentary or anything?
There have been two docudramas already that have been produced, one by the National Geographic Channel and most recently the Weather Channel. So there have already been a lot of stories and docudramas produced about the accident.
Well, James Snail and Cliffs David, thank you all so much for coming in and telling us a little bit more about Annetta Snail. What an incredible voice. We're going to go out with a little bit more of her music. And since you cued our engineer, this is Tonight I Feel Like Dancing.
Thank you.